We want our podcast. We. I'm exhausted now.
From singing that song?
Yeah. What's the big news out there?
Well, honey, the people are fighting back everywhere you look.
Oh, is that right?
And everywhere you look, the feudal class is refusing to leave.
Of course.
We've got in Mexico, we have the stolen elections there. The miracle 50.5% voting machine stole the election for Calderon. Mm. The people are out in the streets protesting and have formed a parallel government, as we know.
Oh, dear.
In Hungary, the riots continue as the people react to the secret audio tape, which was released of their leader admitting to lying about the economy morning, noon, and night in order to steal the elections. That just happened in April.
Mm-hmm.
And in Thailand, the billionaire, what do you call them?
Playboy?
Robber baron.
Robber baron, yeah.
Billionaire robber baron who the people feel is running the country for his own personal gain.
Hmm.
Well, they've been protesting for months, but finally this guy couldn't resist going to New York to speak in front of all the other feudal baron, lord barons of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And while he was gone, there's been a military coup.
Oh, dear.
But he's refusing to leave as well, as is the leader of Hungary. He says, I may have lied, but I'm running the country well. This Thai prime minister is saying from New York, I'm still running the government. I declare this coup illegal.
Mm.
So.
Yeah. Well, that's right. That's right, honey. It's the global insurrection against corporate occupation. What's our buddy Fair Trade Trousers doing? The guy is really working it out there, spreading the word with his musical genius abilities.
He's a lone soldier.
He's out there.
Yeah, but he's in the UK.
Yeah.
We hail from America. Now, these crimes, the lies about
hail,
the economy.
Hail rock and roll.
These crimes about the economy.
Yeah.
These stolen elections.
Yeah.
These are all par for these so-called democratic courses in these countries. Yet we don't have anything so exciting as parallel governments, riots, or military coups.
Where is that?
In
I'll
America.
Give you an example of a parallel government.
Oh,
right,
yeah?
Right there in today in the Financial Times.
There's a parallel government in the Financial Times. Honey,
yep.
You're seeing things.
No, nope. I'll give you an example. While I'm looking for this, pull up that story about Marie Antoinette we were reading about.
Oh, yes.
We got to look at that. I want to talk about the parallel. You're talking about parallel government. I'll give you a parallel government right here. As soon as I find it. It's got to be here. I knew this would happen. Looking for the story again.
Well, mine's from Camille Paglia.
Yeah, right, but we're not there yet, honey. So just, you know.
Okay, honey. I see you're in a...
Huh? What?
You find your little story.
What? I'm going to find it. Because I know it's here somewhere.
Uh-huh.
I know my story's here. I know my story's here. Let's see. Yeah, you know, I never made really the connection between the fall of the Twin Towers and the fall of the Bastille here in Paris, which symbolizes the global insurrection against corporate insurrection of that day, the fall of the Bastille.
Yeah.
Now, there is a paragraph there toward the end of that where it's a very eloquent paragraph. They're talking about it. So yeah, there's a rise in Marie Antoinette-ism.
Mm-hmm.
Big popularity. People are revisiting the insurrection movements of the 18th century, which led to the creation of such things as America. But so this writer is tying the Twin Towers fall to the fall of the Bastille. So they're putting the context of the Twin Towers fall in the context of it's just a people's revolution, that the perpetrators of the Twin Towers collapse are just doing the people's work. According to that, what's the paragraph there?
The very last one?
It says, it's very poetic.
You look at it and everything's so good. The Marie Antoinette story, with its premonitions of doom amid a giddy fatalism, seems to signal a pervasive guilt about near intractable social iniquities. And then she goes on to say Louis XIV created such a the star-making Hollywood system of his day with his court machinery, but then the people inside it got smaller and smaller. And just as today's stars become more and more interchangeable ciphers with blank doll faces. And the perverse agelessness created in the late 18th century by powdering of the hair of both sexes is now paralleled by cosmetic surgery and nerve-deadening injections. After 9/11, when great towers fell like the Bastille in a day, coping for the professional class has required cognitive dissonance. Life's routine goes on amid a surreal bombardment of bulletins about mutilations and massacres. Mm. When, since the reign of terror, has ritual decapitation become such a constant? The fury and cruelty of the French mob were strangely mixed with laughter, as when the severed head of Marie Antoinette's friend, the Princess de Lamballe, was spruced up by a hairdresser and waved on a pike outside the royal family's window. These are the grisly surprises that now greet us every day through our own windows, the glass monitors of TVs and PCs. The return of Marie Antoinette suggests that there are political forces at work in the world that Western humanism does not fully understand and that it may not be able to control.
Yeah. I would say that there's a loss of control. That's something that people are kind of, trying to wrap their minds around. There's a loss of control. There's forces there that are uncontrollable. There's a mix of forces that are uncontrollable. It's an interesting cocktail of forces between globalization and politics, religion. It's an interesting, like a dirt devil in the desert rising up from nowhere, or a hurricane just comes up, tsunami.
Well, she's also earlier in this piece that she wrote, she is likening the powers around the world, whether it's the Thai president, the Hungarian president, the Mexican so-called elected president, Bush, Blair, they're all kind of spent forces. They have no sort of response, but a dull response to this the rising masses of disenfranchised young around the world.
Right. So the Marie Antoinette comment, "Let them eat cake," shows how detached she was from the situation. So you've got the rising mobs in the 18th century, mm-hmm. pitchforks and torches and manning the guillotines, and they, I saw the young Coppola movie.
Yes,
Marie Antoinette. We saw it at a lovely movie theater here in Paris, La Pagode. Oh, a lovely movie theater in the 6th. Arrondissement. But so the mobs, they had been choked of, taxed to death, choked to death. So the mobs rose up. So the monarchy is just, the more that they, the threat, the greater the threat rose, the more they retreated into their powdered faces and wigs and parties. And because I guess they were just figured it was, they had to party while they could party while you can party.
Yep. Well, that's what she was saying, is that, under Louis XIV, the nation felt great, and his elaborate court reflected the greatness of the country and of the monarchy. And then as they got more and more pop idol-like, the people filling those same robes that Louis XIV wore, the clothing and the hairdos did the angry mob filter their anger. They focused it right at that and then off of their head.
Off with their head.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, it's interesting. Who is this writer?
Camille Paglia. Mm-hmm. She's a famous feminist.
She's a feminist?
Yeah, very famous. From the 60s, 70s. She's...
So she's making a connection between the mobs rejecting the monarchs and the mobs rejecting the bankers in the Twin Towers.
Well, she senses an ominous in the air, because the Marie Antoinette has become so fashionable, not only the Coppola movie, but in fashion, and it's a constant theme now. And she reckons it could be something very, it's like, you know, in our universal consciousness from the past.
Yeah. Well, what were we talking about at the beginning, of parallel networks?
We were talking about parallel governments, riots, and military coups.
Oh, yeah. So, and I said, oh, yeah, it wasn't the Financial Times. It's here in the New York Times. It says that these Citigroup, Goldman Sachs, Merrill Lynch, and other securities firms, they're going to start a parallel network to report their trades, challenging the European stock exchanges that now make money by offering this service. A group of nine firms will cooperate on a parallel platform to publish European trade and market data, and yield significant cost benefits and profits working outside the system, they said in a statement. The other participants are Deutsche Bank, Credit Suisse Group, ABN, AMRO, UBS, HSBC, Morgan Stanley.
So, oh my God.
Anytime you attempt to regulate them, they just create a parallel network and just say, oh, well, we're not in that system anymore. Those laws don't apply because we're in a parallel network. It's just like Bush will say, I broke the law. Well, I'm creating a parallel government.
Parallel Geneva Convention.
I'm creating a parallel Supreme Court.
Yeah.
This is a parallel world. I live in a parallel world where my laws, I make the laws. And, so far, nobody's really even close to stopping them. I mean, there's talk about dissent in the Republican ranks, but I think a lot of that is just posing to make it look like they give a shit before the November election's coming up.
Yeah, well, as Democracy Now! Showed yesterday, they interviewed that constitutional expert, and he said, well, the fact is, like, all these so-called rival bills in the Senate from the dissenting Republicans, all of these bills, whether theirs or the White House's, all of them suspend habeas corpus.
Yeah.
Which we've had since 1215. Right.
Magna Carta.
The right to know what the king is charging you with, so that the king could just not arbitrarily detain you at will.
Right. The separation between feudalism, the feudal period, and the modern period of jurisprudence is Magna Carta, which states the king cannot arbitrarily pick people up off the street, throw them away into a black hole, a legal black hole. Mm-hmm. That's the difference between feudalism, indentured servitude, and beginning of an inkling of a modern period of law. And so, now Bush is going pre-Magna Carta.
Well, all of them are, but they're distracting you. They're pretending that there's a debate going on by, our bill says you can't waterboard those guys. And Bush is going on and telling the American people, oh, this is a grave situation. They won't let us waterboard. We need to protect our population, blah, blah, blah. But both of them are participating in this fake debate in order to distract you from the fact that both of them are getting rid of habeas corpus.
It's a straw man.
Exactly.
It's a decoy.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is the radical change is so radical. I think it's so radical people can't even see how radical it is. People can't even see how phenomenally destructive this is. This will be. This is to you cannot. I mean, it's just like I said, America, 1776 to 2000. That's it. Rest in peace. There is no America anymore. There's who knows? It's going to emerge as a corporate theocracy. Corporate theocracy. It's a new form of government we haven't seen before. It's not a little fascism, a little communism, a little this, a little that.
Well, we're going to have to really go back and look. I guess, was it King John that they introduced this, the Magna Carta to, like, control him? Mm. We're going to have to go back to before 1215 to see what it looked like. We know that it was pre-Descartes, and so you weren't allowed to ask questions about anything. You weren't allowed to doubt anything that your leaders told you.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a feeling we'll see very shortened lives. I don't think it's going to be very nice.
No, it's crazy, isn't it? Well, yeah, I was looking at something here, and it caught my attention.
Yeah, honey, what's that?
It's a picture of a big pink building in Mongolia.
Mm-hmm.
This is the Mongolian Stock Exchange. It's a big pink building in Mongolia.
Uh-huh.
It sits in a former movie theater. It was established in 1991. And the entire Mongolian Stock Exchange is worth $83 million.
What do they trade on there? Yak milk or something?
Tugrix.
Tugrix.
Mm-hmm.
What's that?
That's their currency.
Oh, okay.
The companies are raising billions and billions of Tugrix on public offerings. The Mongolian government is also seeking to raise as much as $500 million from an international bond sale.
Oh, no. This is that, you know, Bush was the very first president ever in the history of America to stop in Mongolia, and that was last year.
Now they just sold half a billion in bonds,
mm-hmm.
collateralized by $83 million stock exchange. Mm-hmm. So immediately you've got a more than 5-to-1 debt-to-equity ratio there.
Mm-hmm.
So the bond issuers are going to be running the show, which, of course, are Citigroup, Goldman Sachs, Merrill Lynch. So the Mongolians now can look forward to class war, phosphorus being dropped on the neighbors. Yeah, I know. Yeah, you know, it's kind of funny. Also, we're watching democracynow.org, the Democracy Now! TV show, and they're talking about in Lebanon how the Israelis bombed the glass company.
Yep.
The dairy company.
Yes.
And one other. I think it was maybe.
And the prefab house company.
Yeah, that's right. The house company. And he talked to the executives at these companies, and they said, well, it's, you know, for competitive reasons. This whole skirmish is based on providing cover for Israel to send in jets and blow up our industries.
Of course they did. It was quite obvious.
So, I mean, there was one company there, the dairy company.
Yeah.
I think it was called. What's the name of it? No, the glass company. Manan?
Mm-hmm.
And a dairy company. You know, contrast this to, I mean, I've been watching, been following Warren Buffett's career for 20 years since the Berkshire Hathaway stock was trading at $1,700 a share. It's now close to $100,000 a share.
Mm-hmm.
And Warren Buffett just put $4 billion into Israel for a metal company, metal bending shop, metal bender, some metal company.
Yeah, and then what happens right after that? His competition is wiped off the face of Lebanon.
Yeah. So now Warren Buffett's the biggest shareholder of Coca-Cola.
Mm-hmm.
I would say to the Muslim community out there that in support of the Lebanese who have been bombed, you know, have been bombed back 50 years as far as industrial capability by, it looks as though Warren Buffett engineered that raid of Lebanon. I mean, if you connect the dots, they destroy the competition, and he puts $4 billion into Israel basic industry, and then they just bomb the basic industry of Lebanon. I mean, you could say, oh, this, you know, it's a conspiracy theory. It's not a conspiracy theory. I mean, all I'm saying is that if the Muslims want to compete at all, they need to get busy.
They need to put their competition out of business, too, especially if they're going to be bombed by the competition.
Yeah. That's all I'm saying. I mean, I don't care one way or another. I'll put my, you know, shekels to work on whoever's got a good idea and a, you know, the willingness to make some cashola. I'm just saying that the Muslim community, there are a billion Muslims. I mean, they've got to be able to harness their purchasing power a little bit more effectively than what they're doing. You know, the current strategy is not yielding tremendous results. Although the boycott of Denmark goods was a fantastic campaign. They knocked 50% of exports to Muslim country from Denmark. They knocked 15% of the exports from Denmark.
Yeah, Denmark.
Denmark to the rest of the world. So I mean, it was a very, very, very good, effective campaign. I think the goal was to knock something like 30 billion euros in business off the exports from Denmark. So, but I didn't see any follow-up in the Muslim press. Like, we got to halfway through our goal. We made our goal. This is the next target. You see, this is the problem with boycotts, is that people, they don't understand the economics of them. They don't follow up on them. They don't keep track of them like you would any business. It's a business. It's a business of not spending money versus a business of spending money. But it still revolves money, except that you've got incredible power because you have the infinite capacity not to spend money, whereas your assailants and your competition, it only works if they are spending money. In the U.S., for every dollar of growth, they have to borrow $7 to make a dollar of growth. So their strategy is flawed. So, you know, again, I say to the Muslims out there, what are you waiting for? But I say this to the black community in America, too. They're getting absolutely destroyed. I mean, it's pitiful. But they refuse to get onto the playing field and to fight back in any meaningful way. The Hispanics are in America are, you know, they were active a few months ago. They've crawled back into their shells and they're kind of asleep at the switch again. The Mexicans are now setting up a parallel government. Okay, great. You know, they're showing some grit down there. But, you know, to these groups that feel as though they're getting, you know, destroyed by the monarchs and the monopolists and the cartels and the corporate occupation. Yeah, you need to have some self-respect or whatever, you know. I don't know. I have this argument all the time. I think that, you know, we were watching that show about Harry Tubman. I think that when you debase somebody's life for so long, they begin to believe it.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think this is also what makes people susceptible to religious fanaticism is that they've lost all self-respect. They've lost themselves. So that you're just an empty vessel, and then religious fanatics come along and they pour in their fanatical beliefs into an empty shell. There's nothing there. And so the black community in America is just null and void. The Hispanic community is running on empty. The poor in America believe the reason they're poor is because they themselves deserve to be poor. They see no reason why they should have any kind of quality of life. And that's a tough thing because it's the entire generation. Then you have to kind of write it off. But the generation coming up is so addled, drug addled, and obese, and hooked on Ritalin and these other hyperactivity drugs. This whole next generation's a write off too. Mm. So I think that's when you end up in a situation pre-revolution, insurrection in Europe, 18th century, is when. These are the forces, I think, that are coming together because there are, within all of these various social strata, people that are still clinging to self, a sense of self. Their minds haven't been destroyed. They haven't become religious fundamentalist, Christian fundamentalists in the U.S. or evangelicals in the U.S. or market fundamentalists in the U.K. You know, market fundamentalism is just as ugly as Christian fundamentalism or Islamic fundamentalism. It's an absence of reason. So these groups are now amassing. You get that sense that they're everywhere in the world, that there are groups amassing. Now, I say this because I think it's important to realize what to do in this circumstance, the outcomes, what to do. We've talked about various things.
What to do? What to do, what to do, what to do.
Do you want to hear about parallel science?
What to do.
Parallel science?
Yeah.
Where's that?
Well, in the UK, in an unprecedented step, the Royal Society, Britain's premier scientific academy, has written to ExxonMobil to demand that the company withdraws support for dozens of groups that have misrepresented the science of climate change by outright denial of the evidence. The scientists from the Royal Society also strongly criticize the company's public statements on global warming, which they describe as, quote, inaccurate and misleading. The Royal Society cites its own survey, which found that ExxonMobil last year distributed $2.9 million to 39 groups that the society says misrepresent the science of climate change. So, as we were saying, the bankers don't like the European stock exchanges or reporting networks. Well, they just create their own. George Bush creates his own Supreme Court. Mm. ExxonMobil doesn't like the science, the evidence of crime that they're committing. Well, then they just create their own science.
You don't want to pay back your debt? Just create new debt.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
That's what Goldman Sachs does. They don't want to pay back any debt. They just create new debt. They keep creating new debt. That's why you've got $400 trillion worth of this debt floating around. They don't want to pay back any of the debt. They just want to keep writing the debt and collect the fees. So every single employee at Goldman Sachs, on average, will get a check this holiday season for $500,000. Now, what did they do to engineer that money? Well, they stoked wars in Iraq. They helped fund the Israel's genocide in Lebanon. They helped fund the genocide in Iraq. They helped fund wealth and poverty gaps around the world. They helped contribute to the 7/7 bombing in London, to the 9/11 events in New York, to the Madrid bombings. They helped sponsor Al-Qaeda. This is what they do for a living, and they're getting a $500,000 piece bonus this holiday season as a reward for stoking wealth and income gaps and global conflict and the global insurrection against this corporate occupation. Well done, Goldman. Well done. Well done. Well done. Kudos to you.
But that's the thing, is that I know you were talking earlier about the fact that there are some people who have not sunk into religious fundamentalism. But, you know, I see very, very few people ask questions. It is pre-Magna Carta. It is pre-Descartes in that way, that people think it's somehow right. It's just the way things are that Goldman Sachs bankers make $500,000 a year and a bonus.
Mm. Yeah. Well, it's market fundamentalism. It's market fundamentalism.
This is the way things are.
You know, the mega churches in the U.S. that get like 30,000 people at a time to
come pray under a picture of George Bush.
To rally around genocide, the notions of genocide. I mean, you know, so you've got the Goldman employees, they're rallying around genocide. I mean, they use Adam Smith the way, they misuse Adam Smith the way the Christians misquote the Bible. The way Islamic fundamentalists or Hindu fundamentalists or Buddhist fundamentalists misquote their texts. That's what it's all about. Except that the cult of Goldman has to do not with going to the afterworld and with a bunch of virgins. It has to do with going to Barney's in New York and buying some new suits. You know, that's their version of it.
But there are also another fundamentalism that we haven't really talked about, which is American fundamentalism, because there are people who just selectively quote from the founding fathers. Those sort of people are generally, they're very patriotic, and they also just quote the Second Amendment, the right to bear arms, but they don't realize that it's against their government.
What? Well, what are you talking about? That sounds heretical to me.
No, that's the purpose of this Second Amendment. So they only quote the first part of, like, the right to bear arms, and that's all that's where they stop.
Yeah.
But the whole text of the Second Amendment is, I think, quite clear that it's in order to protect yourself from a tyrannical government.
Yeah, it says that if your government lapses into tyranny, that the citizens need to rectify the problem.
Mm-hmm.
If your government is starting to set up parallel governments and parallel Supreme Courts and parallel legal systems and parallel banking systems, that seems to me to be a very definition of tyrannical power, tyrannical behavior. As Keith, what's his name, Oberman.
Mm. Keith Oberman was talking about, well, he's been on a tirade against Bush in every single time he speaks, but he basically alluded to Thomas Jefferson saying that if your government is taken over by a tyrant, that it's the right of the people and the obligation of the people to take the government back.
How come the politicians don't quote Thomas Jefferson? How come only talk show hosts quote Thomas Jefferson? Well, it's too bad that U.S. politicians don't quote U.S. politicians. U.S. politicians end up quoting celebrities, you know, or TV commercials or pop culture references to make it appear as though they're not brain dead. And then people who are in the pop culture to make it appear as though they have a brain, quote, old ancient politicians.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would suggest that the celebrities and the pop stars stick to writing pop music and the politicians stick to quoting politicians.
Well, the Second Amendment of the United States Constitution is part of the Bill of Rights. It declares the necessity for a well-regulated militia and prohibits infringement of the right of the people to keep and bear arms. Now, the militia is supposed to be the National Guard. So, you know, each state is supposed to really finance their own National Guard. But what has been happening is the federal government has been financing it and therefore sending it overseas. you know, when the National Guard is over there fighting in Iraq, it shouldn't be there. It should be at home defending each state from their government.
Right. That's the that was the purpose of it, right? Because just in case somebody steals an election and ends up creating a parallel government and takes all of the American taxpayers' money and gives it to a few insiders and cronies. In case that happens, the states are supposed to rise up, storm Washington, and take their government back with their state-sponsored militia. And in order to make that happen, the founding fathers allowed the fathers of the state fathers to carry guns.
Yeah. To protect themselves from the tyranny of Great Britain at the time.
No, to protect themselves against the tyranny of George Washington.
Yeah.
If George Washington had slipped and sold out America, especially in the formative years of America, you never know. Any one of the early presidents could have done a deal with Britain.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you see this all the time. Nations are forming. They get their independence in Africa and Central America and South America. And very quickly, they sell out to the American dictator, don't they? Very quickly, they sell out to American contractors. You know, Iraq is, quote-unquote, getting their, quote-unquote, independence. But they're already, it's very, very quickly, it's obvious that the second, this is all about giving over their sovereignty to American contractors. It's not new, you know. Go back to America. The second America got its independence, the threat that those in control of America would give out America's assets to the rulers class in Britain was a very, very real threat. So the founding fathers said, look, one of the checks and balances we're going to put into our Constitution is that we give all these new states, all the people in these new states, the right to keep guns. If the federal government and people in Washington start to sell you out, you, the people that we're supposed to represent, and you put us in office, if that happens, then what this amendment says is go down to Washington and take your government back.
Mm.
Now, this hasn't been a problem for 200 years, which is seems like a long time, but on the cosmic scale of nations, it's not a long time. It's a pinprick of time.
Yeah.
So the U.S. finds itself at this juncture. What the founding fathers warned against, an aristocrat in office, George Bush the third or fourth or fifth or whatever, a descendant of European royalty, has sold out his country to foreign interests, essentially, is what we're talking about. I mean, that is the plain, simple truth. You don't need to get into a whole flowery 20-minute dissertation. The simple truth is this. The President of the United States has sold out the country's interests to foreigners. Yeah, I mean, and the population is suffering. You know, when you're obese, it's not fun. It's not fun to be obese. It's painful, just like it's painful to be emaciated and starving to death. The obesity levels in America are skyrocketing. Close to two-thirds of the country is obese or morbidly obese or ghoulishly obese. These are people who are in pain. They can't stand the fact that they've allowed their government to be stolen from them, and they're trying to kill the pain with food, drugs, alcohol. Heroin use in Britain, high, skyrocketing. Heroin prices are dropping. Why is that? Well, let's see. It all comes from Afghanistan, and Afghanistan is controlled by the U.S. and Britain. I wonder who's in charge of pricing heroin. So let's see. You can't fight back because you're strung out on heroin. You're obese because you can't get any food because all the food's genetically engineered or it's been bleached of any value down there at the Tesco shop, and all the farmers in Britain are killing themselves because Tesco demands that they sell them food below their cost, and they end up killing themselves. So now Tesco is like manufacturing food and made, you know, in part from everything but food. And
did you see that story I sent you about Tesco? You know, we've been wondering, like, how it is that Tesco is about to enter the American market, and they're entering it via California, the one place that Walmart cannot crack.
Yeah.
Well, it turns out that they are building, you know, their first shops in California. And what they're doing is they've pretended that it's a film set.
Yeah.
So people just assume it's a movie.
Mm-hmm. That's incredible, yeah.
That's a great way to just never, like, drop that theme. All this processed food, shopping here, you're just part of a movie. You're an extra. Just keep going.
You're having fun. You're having fun. You're having fun becoming obese and brain dead. That's fun. You're having fun.
Wow.
Right, so Tesco, I mean, it's amazing. You know, Tesco, in order to get into the American market, they've had to come in stealth and to build this huge test store in California and disguise it as a movie set. Now, the people who are anti-Walmart, you know, I read, for example, I think Rob Reiner, he saw that movie about Walmart, the high price of low costs or low prices.
Mm-hmm.
And he got on his soapbox and said, yeah, Walmart's really doing a bad thing. And people are against Walmart. The Democrats are seizing on Walmart because it's a recipe for poverty, because for every nickel you save, you lose a dime in wages, effectively, because the stuff you buy there comes from China. And on the other flip side, this is where your jobs are going. It's called wage arbitrage. But anyway, so, you know, we talked about that George Will story. He's defending Walmart, but of course he quotes the same faulty government statistics that are always dragged out whenever somebody in the overlord class wants to kick the teeth of the common people, even though it's their country, supposedly, or it once was.
Mm-hmm.
So, but none of these people who are had their consciousness raised about Walmart is doing anything about Tesco. It's completely off the radar in America, in California, and it's Tesco is Walmart. They are the same. They're not technically the same company, but it's the same cadre, the same mentality, the same disease. Let's put it that way. It's the same disease. It's not the same company, but it's the same disease. Tesco, once it establishes itself in California, Walmart, of course, can go to the United States and say, well, Tesco is a British company. They're in California. We have to compete. Therefore, we need a license to open up in California. So, of course, then Walmart will be in California. Now the big box phenomenon and disease will explode in new, grotesque ways, which will further undermine the U.S. economy, further put downward pressure on wages in the U.S. economy. And, of course, Tesco already has a situation in Britain where they're giving people credit cards to buy food because people don't have enough money. They don't make enough money anymore to buy food because Tesco outsourced their job to China. So Tesco will say, no problem, here's a credit card. Now you can buy food on credit. Oh, we're going to charge you 16-17% to buy your Twinkies. None of the food's any good for you, but we're going to charge you 16% to kill yourself. Everything has a radio frequency ID tag attached to it. And, of course, those radio frequency ID tags, you're going to put them in the food, I have no doubt, so that they're in your digestive system. So even when you're dead, as long as you're emitting a radio frequency, Tesco will still charge you a monthly fee, which will still go to your bank, and it'll still be passed on to your heirs. People going forward, I predict, will be getting bills for credit card expenses that were generated by their dead relatives 30, 40, 50 years in the past. They could be dead, buried, cremated somewhere in a landfill. As long as you can get a radio frequency, you can charge them something at the end of the month. And there will be a great search. People will be searching for their relatives. Not like that show Roots, where Kunta Kinte is looking for his black, you know, African mama data to give them. They'll be looking for the goddamn body to shut off the RFID tag so they don't get these monthly bills anymore. Because the dead grandma, dead grandpa keeps buying things in the afterworld. They keep emitting this radio frequency ID tag, give a whole new meaning to the world afterworld, afterlife. It doesn't mean you stop shopping. Just because you're dead doesn't mean you can't stop shop. Doesn't mean you can stop. Doesn't mean you stop shopping.
Many of the red state residents will love that. They'll see it as a sign of the afterworld.
That's right.
That's what's going on. This explains the rise of Christian fundamentalism in America.
That's right.
It's because they're about to introduce this. I think you're right.
That's right. These mothers in the Palestinian territory who speak glowingly of their martyr sons,
mm-hmm.
They'll be interviewed on TV and say, do you really think that your son has gone off to the afterworld and is surrounded by virgins? You say, I just got the bill. I got the bill right here. He just bought a case of prophylactics. You don't think he's having fun out there? Of course. Of course, of course, of course. And, you know, the bills will come from some mysterious place, and people will be so stupid at that point that it's just like the papacy. Going back, again, to pre-Magna Carta, where the Pope will come along and say, give us your money, or we're going to condemn you to hell. This is what Bush and Blair are saying, you know, give us this money, give us all your money, or we're going to condemn you to shopping for eternity. And to burden your heirs with an infinite amount of debt for all of time. Or you give us your money now. You know, it's a papal indulgency. It's rackets. It's the mafia. It's a total breakdown of civilization. It's a total absence of jurisprudence. It's America the sequel. America, hell. Yeah, whatever. Who cares? I'm over it already. My grieving. See, the thing is, America is just waking up to the fact that its country is dying, and I'm already over my grieving. This is the difference between me and the average American out there.
Yeah, you've been grieving for the last few years.
Yeah, I'm past the grieving now. I've already grieved the death of America, and I'm moving on. You know, America is not even, most Americans are not even, they're just figuring out the fact that in the year 2000, their country died. You know, they haven't even started the grieving process. I'm already through the grieving process. You know, there's a big, bad world out there. 95% of the world population is not American. You know, America's a little pisher of a country. They got 300 million people. So what? They've got, you know, $70 trillion in debt that they have no way of paying off unless they give the Chinese California, give Chinese Alaska, give Chinese Fannie Mae. You know, get over it. Move on. As Tony Blair would say, get over it. Get over it, man. Get over it. Well, I don't know about what's going on. What else is happening?
Well, Bush and Ahmadinejad had that verbal duel.
Did they? They have a verbal. They were in the same room.
No, they weren't in the same room, but they spoke in the same room before the General Assembly of the UN. I haven't really heard. I thought we would hear more about it, like who did better, sort of thing.
Yeah.
But it is looking more, going back to what Camille Paglia said. I mean, it does look all hollow. I mean, it's supposed to be so grand. It's a General Assembly. It's a UN. It's the annual address by Bush to the UN. And it does seem like he seems smaller and smaller every year. His words seem smaller and smaller. And it just seems like, yeah, right, whatever. And nobody believes anything anymore. It's the waning ancien regime.
Well, you know, I mean, they believe what they see in the Dow Jones. If these guys can keep the Dow Jones high, they'll win. And it doesn't matter how much debt they use to do it.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have to pay the debt.
No.
So they've got a blank check. So I saw this is interesting. This is goes into the category of wealth transference from the common good to a few people. Leading universities that spend money helping academics turn their research into commercial ventures are seeing a 600% return on their investment over there at Harvard.
Mm-hmm.
So you would think that Harvard University, if they're making tons of money on their investments, that this would help to lower the cost of education and to foster egalitarianism and to create an educated society. But instead, cost of tuition at Harvard keeps going up. They're only allowing only the aristocracy into Harvard, the American aristocracy, because then they give them access to investment opportunities in the endowment, and they're on Easy Street. This is an entrenched aristocracy in America, thanks to the public markets that are servicing the aristocratic few.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, it becomes more like the Saudi Arabia thing, is if you have this resource, you don't need the people. So if these investments are generating incomes of 600%, then they don't need the people so much. So they can charge whatever they want now in order to make sure it's only exclusive people who have access to the income stream.
That's right. So there's this huge income stream that you can attach yourself to if you're willing to look the other way while your government commits genocide.
Mm-hmm.
As long as you're willing to look the other way while your government commits genocide, then you can be hooked into this income stream, which is the profits come from genocide. The profits come from murder. Profits come from destroying countries and by creating incredible amounts of hatred around the world. That's where the profits come from. And you're entitled to your dividend of these hate profits if you're willing to not challenge your government, look the other way, go shopping, you know.
Well, but that's the system as well. So once you create this feudal system with angry masses out there, the hordes at the gates, that income stream is kind of a moat. It protects you from those people, the hordes at the gates.
Oh, yeah.
So you sell out, you do whatever in order to not be torn apart by the masses, but thus creating more masses and more anger in the masses.
Well, just like this Bush administration plucks people off the road and puts them into black holes of no legal system.
Mm-hmm.
you know, I think you're going to see more and more of this where businessmen are just, you know, disappear suddenly. And they're never heard from again. They're not held for ransom. They're not held for political purposes. They just disappear.
Yeah, and they always use the excuse. It's already happening, but they always use the excuse as, oh, they fell over the cruise ship. Somebody disappeared on a cruise ship. There's always no evidence.
Yeah, I think that the global insurrection is just going to start plucking people, businessmen on the way to work, just disappear. Because this is the example that they've been given. There is no moral beacon in the world at this time. I mean, Colin Powell is right. The rest of the world is seeing their perception of America is that it has no moral compass. There is no moral standard. That they're just it's just kill or get killed. This is the message that America is sending out there. Right now in the world, there is no country that's really standing up for any sense of decency. I can't think of one really. I mean, a major country. You have smaller countries that are enclaves of civilized behavior. But as far as the majors go, there is no major country at this time.
I hope the music gets better.
Well, probably will.
Usually in these types of periods, they have artistic outpouring. You know, you have good art anyway, so that's something to look forward to. And on the internet, on YouTube and these other places, you'll have a good show, I think. Certainly, people are going to be expressing themselves as a way to preserve their sanity. You know, it becomes a pressure cooker, where you've got people who are trying to cling to their sanity, who are unwilling to give their proxy to the government to commit genocide in their name, who will be trying to desperately express themselves in places like, well, we can all see it, like YouTube, and we can watch people desperately cling to humanity, and we can watch the final throes of humanity kind of wiggling, you know, as this global snuff film plays itself out between the U.S. and the U.K. and these other global genocidal maniacs just kind of put the final nails into the coffin. We can watch a few people squirming in the artistic death dance. Well, that'll be amusing, you know. That'll take up some time. It'll kill some time between portions of cheese here in France.
Well, I think the new art is just going to be nature, really. Just turning a camera on nature. It's going to be like Picasso's Guernica. It's captivating as nature just like besieges us. You know, the flooding rivers, the hurricanes, the just chaos, constant disaster. It'll be riveting.
It'll be crucifying.
Well, you know, that car crash thing, you know, you can't look away. Well, I think this is going to be like Climate Collapse TV. You just can't look away.
Climate Collapse TV. Watch the glaciers melt in real time. I mean, I'm just glad I don't have any. I will save that for tomorrow.
Okay.
Yeah, honey. Got to go down to the pool, man, and get some laps in. We'll watch, see what happens to the apocalypse later on. I'm going to do some shopping. What do you want for dinner tonight?
I want some more of that cheese you got yesterday.
That was good stuff, Don.
Yeah.
They really know what they're doing here, making that cheese.
Maybe, I totally got high.
What else are we going to get?
That's enough for
some
me.
Some veggies?
Yeah, some veggies. Nice tomatoes. They have such lovely tomatoes here. Okay. And it's apple season. Some
of the apple season's kicked in.
Yeah.
All right, well, I'm going to go shopping.
Okay, honey.
And you do some editing.
Okay, honey.
And then maybe you'll take a nap.
Okay, honey.
And then we'll read the web and see how much further along the Bush's program has taken the world into extinction.
Okay.
All right, bye, y'all.